Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2016. Lecture 9, delivered on February 9, 2016. The title of this lecture is Annuities and Perpetuities.
Today, Annuities and Perpetuities. Long ago, I would have done this lecture mostly by showing you formulas, and then at the end, try to do a couple of quick practical applications. I changed my ways in that some time back, simply because technologies have come about that have replaced a lot of what we used to do with hand calculations, with these calculating machines. And so I'm going to attack this by, first of all, doing a problem, a real-life problem that you might actually find useful for yourself. And then I will show you a couple of formulas. Now, there's one place in this topic on annuities and perpetuities where there's a little formula that's actually a lot faster to use algebraically than it would be to try to figure out how to do it on a financial calculator. But some of these things, I mean, the financial calculator can do it so quickly and so easily now that there's not really much reason to go after formulas. And certainly, I understand that in the accounting class, they're still having to use tables to do things like annuities. And that's even worse than not showing you a formula because you're not seeing how the table is created and all that. No tables in here. It's just a financial calculator and also just using a regular plain old calculator for one thing that's kind of like a little too simple to use a financial calculator for. But the bottom line is that this is very practical, what I'm showing you here, both in your personal lives and professional lives, and especially in terms of what we call financial planning. This is sort of the basis I've been showing you the last couple of lectures of financial planning. And here's one place where it comes and you can actually use it pretty quickly. Starting out, just a couple of definitions for you. And this is a little bit different from how the book frames it, but this is a sort of an older definition of an annuity. An annuity is just a stream of cash flows. In other words, it's not one cash. I guess a lump sum, like I showed you last week, that would be an annuity of one cash flow. But in general, an annuity is like $100 in a year, $500 in 2 years, $300 in 3 years, something like that. It's a stream of cash flows. That's an annuity. Now, a level annuity would be an annuity that has the same cash flow at each period, a level annuity. Think of it this way. You borrow money to buy a car. You are selling the bank, the lending institution, a security, a debt security. And in exchange, you agree to pay these payments over a period of, let's say, 5 years monthly. What you're doing actually is promising the bank a level annuity. The bank provides you with a lump sum, a present value up front, in exchange for you promising in exchange a level annuity. Now, there are two flavors of annuities. Annuities that begin at the start of a period we call annuity due. Annuities that happen where each of the cash flows is at the end of the period, we call ordinary annuities. Let me try this on you. Sir, if we're talking about you go and get a car loan, yeah, and you have to pay the payments, that's an annuity. Would that be more likely an annuity due or an ordinary annuity? No, they're not going to make you make your payment first payment right away. They'll make you pay it at the end of the year. Yeah, that's where I'm trying to get you to, is where you see, oh, well, each of my payments will occur at the end of the period. That's an ordinary annuity. On the other hand, if you were planning to start, you want to start putting money down for to buy a car, and you're going to start putting money in the bank every January 1, and it's December 31, that would be an annuity due, because your payments would go at the beginning of every period, and then the last payment you'd put in January 1, you'd let it ride probably to the end of the year and buy a car on the last year. So annuity dues are more likely to be for future value problems, although sometimes you'll see them for present. Level annuities are more likely to be for where you're trying to calculate the present value of something. Like if you start a job, you're going to work this job for 2 years. You're going to be paid every 2 weeks. And you want to find out the present value of that annuity. That would be an ordinary annuity because your first paycheck isn't going to come for 2 weeks. So that's more likely to be an ordinary annuity. So keep those in mind. Sometimes the problem won't say this is an annuity due or this is an ordinary annuity, but just by the plain wording of it or just the logic of how the cash flows would work, you can see which way it goes. But without further ado, put this down. You have decided that you want a car, okay? So you're going to buy a car. How much do you want to pay for your first new car? What do you say? How much?
Mid-20s.
Oh, you're a little on the rich side. Okay, let's say $22,000. You're going to look at a car. You're going to have to borrow $22,000 from a bank, okay? And it'll be on a 5-year loan, and your payments will be monthly on the loan. Okay, well, we're all good now. So far, so good on this. Now, so we're going to borrow $22,000 on a 5-year loan with monthly payments. Okay, so far so good. Now, let's say the APR that they offer you is, well, right now you could probably pull 5.99% APR, annual percentage rate. 5.99% annual percentage rate. So the bank's gonna give you $22,000 right now to buy a car. So that would be the present value. And then you're promising them an annuity, a flow of cash every month of the same amount, a level of annuity, for a period of a certain number of years. So I'm going to use the Pearson calculator. Now, I personally, if I have a handheld calculator, I use a TI-83 Plus or an 84. They are actually excellent for finance. They got a whole financial functions facility in the apps that are, it's really good. But Pearson financial calculator, which you can get the app for your phone or tablet as well, I've begun to kind of like it. It's pretty straightforward, and I just want you to get used to using these kinds of financial calculators. And realistically, speaking as a finance professional myself, you use a financial calculator. You would never pull out the tables and know anymore unless you're really geeky about it. You wouldn't use the formulas for these things. So what we're going to do is we're just going to, first of all, always clear, hit the reset just to make sure everything is cleaned out of the memory buffers. And we're going to do, okay, now, we're going to start how many payments? These are monthly payments for 5 years. So how many periods are there going to be?
60.
And I mean, you can do 12 times 5 if you want, but you say, okay, 60. And that's going to be the N, enter. Okay, we're rolling. Okay, so now, the I over Y, that's your APR, 5.99. Now remember, if you use an actual math formula, you use decimal. But these financial calculators want you to put in the percentage. Kind of bad because I've even forgotten when I used actual algebraic formula, I've put in the percentage number instead of the decimal number. Okay, but it's 5.99, I over Y, enter it. Now the next thing is payments per year, 12. Payments per year, enter that. Don't forget to do that, okay? Write down these steps, one after the other, and you won't go wrong, unless I screw it up myself. Okay, now, the price value or the present value, that's how much you're getting. So that would be the 22 grand. Now, I'm going to tell you something here. It's old-timey stuff. Financial calculators seem to always want a present value as a negative number. Don't ask me why. It's been since I saw financial calculators first show up in the early 80s. And it always seems to have been that way, that they like to have the present value put in as a negative. Present value, enter. Okay, so now all we have to do is compute your payments. $425. That fast. You can figure out, and as a matter of fact, you could even back into it. You could say, well, I can afford a payment of $320 a month. Put the payment in, and then say compute present value, and that would tell you how much of a car you can buy. You can do it either way. And I mean, I've even sat down with people who were looking at budgeting for a car, and I say, how much can you afford? They tell me a dollar amount, and I'll just tell them, okay, this is the car you can afford. At this, and so basically what that did was they can then walk into the dealership and say, all right, this is the car I want. Out the door, it has to be this and no more. But there you go. $425.22. Now, one nice thing about present values and future values, especially of annuities, if you put in something wrong, your number is going to look ridiculous. I mean, you'll know almost every time that you've done something wrong. My favorite story is a couple of years ago, I had on a test, a student got a payment for a car of $10,219 or something like that. And she came to me after class, well, what did I do wrong? I said, does that payment even make sense to you? I don't know. My dad pays for my car. She had, of course, forgotten to put divide by 12 for the APR, and that's why she got this massive payment. But I mean, aside from that story, if you get like a $10,000 payment, you know you've done something wrong. Actually, $425 seems like a steep payment. I'm used to making, you know, $20 payments to Earl's used cars place. But there you go. Anyway. Oh, you got yourself now. You can figure out what the cost of a car, what your payments on a car are. let's do something a little bit of a reverse. Now, this is actually financial planning. As a matter of fact, last night, I had a fellow from speak to my students in the finance club, and he was just pulling up Excel spreadsheets where he was doing very much what I'm showing you, except he was doing Excel, and you can do these in Excel too. They got a PV function, annuity, PVA, and all that kind of stuff there too. But let me show you something up here. Look at your timeline. Do you see how it will, unless you tell it otherwise, it will assume that you have an ordinary annuity. Okay? If you want an annuity due, then you would hit the BGN, begin button. Watch what happens to the timeline. That's actually kind of cool. See how it shows you the timeline differently if you're beginning versus ending? So you can even look at the timeline and say, all right, is the timeline, does that timeline make sense? Are the payments where they should be? Yes, at the ends of each of the periods. So if you're doing an annuity due, don't forget to hit the BGN button. And always just have a quick glance up here at the timeline just to get your confirmation that the payments are happening when you want them to. Okay, now. You, sir, have just found out that you're going to be a daddy. I know, hard to believe, but there actually is someone for everyone. And you're in a panic, You know, oh, I got to get out the birth announcements. I got to have a baby shower and all this kind of stuff. And I got to figure out, you know, get a lawyer for the child support payments and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, okay, so you're a good father. You want your child to have a college education. You want your child to have a college education. So you have resolved, child's going to be born. And on the day of the birth, you're going to put an amount of money in the bank. And every year on the child's birthday, you're going to put money in the bank. The last payment you'll do is on the child's 17th birthday. And then 1 year later, you'll say, here's the money that I've put in. You'll give that as the kid's 18th birthday present. The kid might actually like you for a while for this. Estimated cost out 18 years. I'm going to put it, we were doing this last night. We would put it that to have enough money for the 4 years of education at the 18th year of life, you would have to have in the bank for the kid $260,000. $250,000. That's right. Uh-huh. Now, if that doesn't make you want to vomit, nothing will. Okay. That's right. A kid could go to Heartland and learn truck driving. God. Anyway, no. Let's clear this out, okay? Now, so here, oops, I didn't mean to do that. Reset. Always remember to hit reset. Okay, now here, do we want that $260,000? Is that a present value or is that a future value? Talk to me. Is that a present or a future value?
Future.
Yeah, that's a future value. We want that money to hit in the future. So the one thing right off the bat that we would want to put in, okay, we would want to put in the $260,000 as a future value right off the top. Right off the bat, we would do that. Now, these are going to be one period per year, so N will equal one. Payments per year, one. I don't even think you have to do that, really. But I do it anyway. Okay. Now, there's going to be a total of 18 of these. At the 0th birthday, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, through the 17th, then you stop. So that's a total of 18 drops, level drops into the bank. Now, you could probably structure an annuity like this if you set it up with the bank. Interest rates suck right now, but they're getting a little better. And especially if you've got a commitment with the bank that you're going to do this, and they would punish you with fees if you don't do it. Let's say that you might be able to pull off with a bank a 5.5% interest rate per year. Okay? The last thing we're going to need to know is this an ordinary annuity or is this an annuity due? Do the payments start at the beginning of each period or at the end of each period? Yeah, it's a due because you're going to do the first payment immediately and then let that last payment ride for a year. So we would hit, look at the timeline, watch the timeline, begin, and now we're going to compute the payments. Ah, bam. You got to put that in the bank every year to accomplish this. In a way, that's not so as horrible as it might look, if you think about it. But still, that's pretty stiff. And there's, again, the thing I talked about in that last lecture about financial planning. You got to convince people they have to do this. If they break the chain, it gets bad. Like if you decided when the kid's 12 years old and the kid has just given you attitude and has just gotten her third piercing, or it's a boy and he's just come home and he's obviously just tweaked out to the max, and you know, and you You know, you say, I'm not going to put it on paper this year. Well, you really caused some problems. In the 14th year, you know, you're doing pretty well, but there was that boat you really wanted, and there's that money just sitting there. The kid's stupid. The kid's probably not going to go to college. So anything you do to break the cycle is going to make the rest of it, to fix it, worse. Okay? So you got to keep that in mind, that we have to, this is our biggest problem with talking to people about financial planning, couples, individuals, is, look, we can set this up for you, but you've got to maintain the discipline to do these payments when you're supposed to. And there you are. That's your path. You've got to do $8,359.41 every year on the kid's birthday. Last one drops in on the 17th birthday, and then you ride it for a year, and on the 18th birthday, you just give the kid the money in the account. Okay? Now, think about this, that you decide, it turns out that you are fertile of loin, so you have a second kid and a third. As it turns out, you are from the south side of Decatur. By the fifth one, you see, what's going to happen is that as you have more children, the ability to prepare to do something like this becomes dramatically less and less. One of the reasons we have seen family size reduce in the United States since World War II was because people subconsciously understood that financial planning for a good future for kids becomes less and less viable as you have more of them. Think of four kids over 6 or 7 years. This turns into a nightmare at its peak, with all of them having savings put away for them. There are very few incomes, especially one income households, and in a lot of cases two income households, that would be able to sustain all of them going to college. So keep that in mind when you're doing not just your financial planning, but your family planning too. And this is actually kind of an uncomfortable lecture, but it's something we tell younger couples who come to us for financial planning. You know, we've got to talk about things like how many kids you plan to have, how far apart you plan to have them, and all of that kind of stuff. And then sometimes you have the contingency. I had a couple, this has been like 7 or 8 years ago. They were doing their financial planning. They were being really responsible for this. Well, unfortunately, she had twins. 3 years later, twins again. I thought, dude, lay off. Quit it. You know, I would tell the guy, I wanted to take him off to the side. But so that in itself created its own kinds of disruptions to a financial plan. You know, they were making decent money. They were, you know, younger professionals. But, man, it is hard when you have the unexpected showing up in this kind of an equation to deal with that. As we worked it out so that we could at least get a good stab, but there's only so far that they could go in putting money in the bank for the future. They got involved. A number of states some years back got into this thing called education bonds. Have you ever heard of them? Where you could buy these instruments from the state, and essentially what they would do is, it was like a savings account like this, tax-free and all that, so that you could financially plan for kids to go to college. The kids could use these instruments to pay their tuition when they went to college years later. Sounded like an interesting and great proposal in principle, but unfortunately, when you're giving money to a state to take care of for you, like Illinois, bad idea. Anyway, here's a rule. Don't give trust your money to something that is less responsible than you are. Okay, now, here, this is essentially the whole nine yards of how you do annuities and annuities. Level ordinary annuities and level annuities due. This is how you do it. Yeah, you can use the tables if you want. Yeah, I can show you the formulas if you want. But why would you do that if you've got a financial calculator? Now, in the next lecture, I'll pull up a TI-83 Plus emulator and show you how you can do it on one of those calculators as well. But this Pearson, like I said, I've begun to really kind of like this Pearson calculator. It's so straightforward. And you can even do unlevel cash flows, too, on this thing. You can just key in each year how much you're going to put in and figure out what the present value is and the future value. So it's not just levels that you can do with these calculators. And this one is actually really efficient at that. So again, think about getting that app. There's a free version of it Pearson offers on Google Play. You can find it. And on Apple's iTunes, I think it is, you can get it as well. Okay, now, there's a variation on the annuity. It's not a variation, it's a special case. In fact, there are two special cases. One of them is just sort of a twist on the other one. But these are incredibly useful to securities analysts. Because with these, in certain conditions, I can price stock. I can find the price of a stock. What should be the price of a stock? I want to start off with a really kind of something kind of depressing to you. You're going to die. Okay. You do know that, right?
Someday.
Yeah, well, it's going to be sooner. I don't know that. You know, I mean, you're going to run into a couple of people later in your life, I've heard, that are going to really mess with you and get you into really bad stuff. So it could be sooner, it could be later, but it will happen. You will die. It will probably hurt like hell. You'll scream and cry and bitch and fuss. And then you'll finally shut up and be gone forever.
Sounds peaceful.
I know, right? Interestingly enough, that is just a bottom line principle. You are mortal. You may look at yourself in the morning, you know, in your boxer shorts, as your dad looks, you look like your dad. If it's good enough for the ladies, it's good enough for me. But you are not a god. You are mortal. However, you live in a world of things that are mortal. As a matter of fact, you are specializing in college in things that are immortal. Do you know what they are? I told you earlier. No, not exactly. Corporations. Corporations have no theoretical end to their lives. They are eternal. They do not die except by their own mistakes or their own choice. You do. You see, that's why there is a highly dubious part to any argument that corporations deserve all of the rights the Constitution grants to humans, to citizens. There's a fundamental difference between a human and a corporation. A human is mortal by definition. A corporation, by definition, is immortal. Now, that doesn't mean they can't die. They die because their stewards are stupid, or their stewards choose to kill them in mergers or hostile takeovers, whatever. But on their own, they do not die. So, in other words, if we were to find a way to measure the value of a corporation as an annuity, a cash flow coming from the future, through the future, it would not be one of these annuities, a 5-year auto loan, a 30-year home mortgage. It would be an eternal cash flow. If N equals infinity, we call the annuity a perpetuity. If the cash flow is forever, it is called a perpetuity. I'm trying to remember. Back many, many years ago, well, way before your time. In the 60s, the government would do these public service announcements. And they weren't, most of them weren't terrifying like they are today. They were just like informational nuggets and tidbits to help people with their lives kind of thing. And I remember distinctly one, back in a day when television was still black and white, they had one that said, here's something you might find interesting. If you put $50 in the bank every month for 20 years, you could then withdraw $50 a month forever. In other words, they were explaining, they didn't use the term perpetuity, but they said you could actually, over a 20-year period, create a perpetuity for yourself. It wouldn't end when your life ended. It would just keep going, $50 a month forever. In other words, there would be so much in the account that it could never overcome, that the principal could never be overcome by the withdrawals at $50 a month. That's a perpetuity. Now, in terms of corporations, if we were to say, all right, we've got to use some pretty specific conditions under which a perpetuity would, we could use a simple formula, and these are actually really simple formulas. If we say, all right, suppose we have a stable corporation that provides a dividend. We know it's going to happen. We know how much it's going to be or how much it's going to grow or something like that. And you hold that permanently. You don't sell it to realize capital gain. But if that corporation is really just a stream of dividends happening year over year over year, forever, because the corporation would live forever, well, that's a classic perpetuity, and we have a formula for it. Let me show you. I'm going to dig out my pen here for a second. Bear with me. I'm going to show you the formula. The formula is, this is the one where it's so simple you wouldn't want to use a financial calculator. You just want to use a regular calculator to do it. Let me show you. Document camera. Really? Oh. Well, that was tasty as hell. Well, does anyone else have that sinus thing that's going around? I've got it real bad, too. Okay, look. Here is for a perpetuity. Now, this is the general formula, and then there is a simplified version of the formula for specific corporations. Yeah, go. Oops. Yeah. Oh, there we go. Yeah, always remind me of that because I've written a long time. People just keep sitting there waiting for me. Anyway, okay, here. The present value of a perpetuity that is a constant growth perpetuity. In other words, the perpetuity, the cash flow will grow at a known amount every year, or every period, I should say, would be the cash flow one period out. It's not the one that's just happening now. It has to be grown one period for this to work. Over the discount rate minus the growth rate. That's all there is to it. So if I knew a corporation's dividend the next period, I have a discount rate for the cash flow, and I know what that growth rate is on the dividends, I can price the stock of the corporation. I can price it. Now again, this has to be a corporation that is stable. The dividend is going to be there, and it's going to grow at least for the foreseeable future at some constant rate. Like 5% growth. Now, interestingly enough, if you go through more stable, older corporations, you look at their dividend year over year over year, it's going to blow you away how that growth rate from year to year stays the same. I mean, in some cases, you'll see it edge up a little bit and then back down a little bit. But for the most part, corporations, once they start doing dividends, they have a growth rate that is either zero or it stays the same, the growth rate. I can't remember what corporation it was. I was looking at one just last week, and I was just calculating over the last 5 years the dividend. It was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and I calculated the growth rate year over year. it was exactly the same growth rate year over year, which is what the Wall Street boys want and expect, because then they can price the security a lot more cleanly. Now, let me show you a variation on this formula. There is a kind of stock that pays a dividend forever, but it does not grow. It is one of the, it used to be. The present value of a zero growth dividend, zero growth perpetuity, is just cash flow over K. You can see that if you look at it, that's exactly the same as the other formula if G equals zero. Now, remember here, See this cash flow right here? CF1 is going to be the cash flow or the dividend or whatever it is that just got paid, grown one period. Don't ever forget that. Sometimes they'll tell you the dividend next year will be. Or sometimes they'll say they just paid a dividend up. So if they're telling you what the dividend is now or what the cash flow is now, don't forget to grow it one period before you use the formula. Over here, there is a kind of stock that pays the same dividend every year forever. It's called preferred stock. Now, preferred stock, the stock certificates actually, they say, a preferred stock certificate, it says, it gives the par value of the stock. Par value, $40 per share preferred. Then it tells you a percentage. 1.4%. You just take 1.4% times $40 and you know what your check is going to be every year forever. That's how preferred stock works. Now, an interesting thing about preferred stock is if it's cumulative preferred, which most preferred is, if they don't pay you the dividend in a given year because they had a bad year, they have to make it up. And even more, preferred stock has to be completely caught up before any common stock dividend can ever be paid. Preferred stock is preferred to common stock. So if you're buying common stock, one thing you might want to check is to make sure if there is preferred that it's caught up. See what I mean? Now, preferred stock used to be a highly desirable thing for financial planners because it was great for old people or older people. You buy, old people come in, well, I got $1 million. Well, we just put it into preferred stock, and then you've got to check a known amount every year forever. So preferred stock used to be a love child for financial planners when they were dealing with older people. For some reason, honestly, I kind of have a suspicion. But it was about 4 years ago, I took my finance club up to one of the brokerage houses up in the Chicagoland, and they were talking about financial planning products that they had for different types of investors. And they said, well, we got these fixed income products, and they talked about all these complicated things that they put into them. And I just asked, why aren't you just using preferred stock? What the hell? Well, no one uses preferred stock anymore. I mean, why not? Well, we just don't. So they were going through all these gyrations with different kinds of securities so that they could create the effect of constant level dividends, which is what preferred stock is, instead of buying, putting preferred stock itself into the portfolio. It's like making a drink mix that tastes like orange juice, but there is no orange juice in it. It's a bunch of extraordinarily complicated chemicals. And at first I thought, what the hell? Why are they doing this? Why? There are companies that issue preferred stock all the time, especially companies that are involved in real estate. Every time they want to buy a new strip mall or an enclosed mall or put up a new apartment complex, they'll issue preferred stock. It's just kind of, what they do. But American brokerage houses just don't seem to buy into it. Japanese houses do, other Asian houses do, European trust funds do, but American broker organizations just aren't interested in it at all. I think the reason is that preferred stock, see, when common stock is issued, a new issue of common stock, what's called a primary market sale of common stock, The broker commissions off the sale are really serious. I mean, it's heavy duty. It's just lots of money goes to the brokers, the lawyers, the accountants, and everything like that. With preferred stock, it is so simple that there's hardly any fees involved. As a matter of fact, even in the calculation, we don't even use a flotation cost. And I almost smell that there's just this kind of thing, well, there's no margin to be made off being involved in preferred stock sales. So we just don't do it. Not that they aren't high quality, they just, that's the way they do it. Let me show you some. Let me show you just a couple of quick dirty ones here. I could pull. Suppose I want to do one for the preferred stock first. Preferred stock first. ABC Inc. 1.4% preferred. Par value $50 per share. Okay, we'll just do that. Let's use a discount rate, the K. Let's use a discount rate. This is very safe stuff. Understand that preferred stock has a low return, 1.4%, because it's very low risk. So we would use a discount rate that reflects that very low risk. Let's say maybe is about 1.2%. Now, where am I getting 1.2%? I'm pulling it out of my ass. Later in the semester, I will show you how to get the discount rates. So you'll have a complete model that you can use. It's really not hard at all. It's called the capital asset pricing model. It's just a simple little formula for getting discount rates. You're almost ready for it. Actually, you're ready for it now, but I just don't do it until a little later. Okay, now, so all we would do, first of all, our dividend, in other words, our cash flow, is $50 per, this is how you get to figure out what the dividend is, times 0.014. See, that's actually telling you, you take what's on the, literally, this is on the certificate itself. So it's like, it's never going to change. It is embedded in the instrument. 1.4 times 50. And if you crank that out, let me flip over here real quick. Where's my calculator? Okay, let me get the scientific one up. Okay, you just take 0.014 times $50. That's the dividend. You'll get a 70 cent per share dividend forever, per year, forever. Again, you can see why these are great fixed income. Someone's got $1 million, you just buy $1 million worth of preferred stock at the dividend rate, that at a reasonable dividend rate, and the person will get a check for that amount of that forever, every year. But anyway, okay, so all we're going to do is we're going to say the price value of this stock is going to be the 70 cents per share. Divided by 0.012. Remember, use the decimal, not the percent. Use the decimal. This is actual math, not giving it to the financial calculator. Honking that in there, just saying divided by 0.012, $58.33. That's what the price of the stock should be right now. That's the present value of the annuity. Of the level perpetuity. Perfect pricing. Now again, what I'm showing you with these formulas, this applies to stable, mature securities. We have to get some real high-powered math when it's these new startups, and honestly, it's almost anyone's guess what's the real price. But for old stocks, for secure, for stable, mature stocks, preferred, should be about 58.33. So if I saw it floating at 58, I'd probably do a buy on it. If I saw it at 59, I'd probably short sell it, arbitrage it out. And I'll tell you about short sales. I don't know if you've ever heard of short sales, but you can profit off a stock that's going to go up. That's called going long. you can profit off a stock that's going, that's dying. That's called going short. But anyway, that's what about what the price should be. Okay, so now let's go over to this one. This one would be for a normal common stock that has a dividend that's going to grow at some rate every year. CNTB common just paid. Sorry, I'm just testing you to see if you can see. Okay, CNTB common just paid a 25-cent per share dividend that is expected to grow at 5% per year for the foreseeable future. While you're catching up with that, I'll make a mention here. For the foreseeable future, you're going to hear me say that. And that is not me trying to get out from under saying forever. But here it is. Okay. It is the year 2076. It is on this day in the year 2076. Okay?
Man, I'm old.
I know, right? But, I mean, most of you is plastic anyway. I mean, as long as, you know, you have a friend who can reconnect the tube into your kidney so you don't feel trickling on your butt, I mean, you're fine. What's going to happen that day? Do you know?
I'm going to be old.
I know. Well, you stop bitching about being old. Like I said, there's someone for everyone.
Isn't that what old people do?
What?
Bitch about being old.
Do you hear me bitching? Yes. Here's the deal, though. You don't know what's going to happen. I don't. You see, so this thing, well, it doesn't the perpetuity, or don't those perpetuity formulas say you it's the same forever? How do you know this is going to be forever, that dividend is going to grow 5%? I don't. But whatever's going to happen out there in 2076, does that matter to you right now? Hell no. For you, probably what happens tomorrow, well, it kind of matters because you got plans and commitments. But realistically, you see that thing about we have to know exactly forever and ever? Oh, horse crap, because by the time you get out 30, 40 years, present values are like tiny numbers, like pieces of pennies out there anyway. So it really doesn't matter that you have that deviation from purity and perfection. Are you everything your mother wanted you to be?
Sure.
Oh, no, you're not. Absolutely not. But you are pretty darn close. I mean, you're a fine, strapping, upstanding young stud. And I mean, it's going to work out, okay? So we can't, any time you talk about theory, well, you can deviate from the theory and still have the formula work pretty darn well. And we use this formula. Watch what's going to happen, okay? Now I want you to discount the cash flows at 6.5%. And as I told you before, this, I'm pulling this out of my butt right now, but I will show you how you get this, the discount rate. Not too long, and like I said, you could do it now. I could show you the CAPM, capital asset pricing model, and you could do it now, but we'll just pull them out for the time being. Here's the thing. I gave you the dividend that just happened. The formula needs the cash flow one period out. So I've got to grow this dividend. So in other words, I need cash flow one, I need K, and I need G. Okay, cash flow one is going to be cash flow zero grown one period. So I'm going to take 25 cents, and I'm going to multiply it by 1 plus 0.05. And that's going to come out to be 26 and a quarter cents, 0.2625, okay? Again, if I had said the dividend next year will be, then you would not have grown it. It would already be CF1. Read that in the problem. They pull that trick on a couple of questions in the online quiz and test. Watch out for it. K is 0.065. Again, don't forget to use the decimal version. This is actual real math. And the growth rate is 5%. That's 0.05. Time to lock and load, PV, is going to be 0.2625. Did I just have a small stroke? What the hell? What happened? Oh, the light came on. That always worries me. When a light starts shining at my age, that means that the angels are coming for you or something really bad. Anyway, divided by 0.065. Less 0.05. And watch it with doing this in parentheses. It's so easy to just key that thing in down there. Here, wait. It's so easy to key in 0.065 minus 0.05 without trapping in parentheses, and then you get the sad wrong number. But anyway, PC, let me kick this in here. You would do 0.2625 divided by open parenthesis 0.065 minus 0.05, close the parentheses, equals $17.51. And then there it is, price of the stock. Now, is this going to be perfect? Hell no. But I will tell you this, that this is one of our useful tools in the real life out there. What we can do is we can look at this and say, all right, 1751. Huh, that stock is sitting at 1720. If I believe my numbers, parameters are good, I'd probably buy in and look for an arbitrage, okay? If I saw the stock sitting at 18 and a quarter, that's higher than what I'm, and I think my numbers are right, I'd probably short that stock, on the chance that, yeah, it is a little overpriced right now. Now, these kinds of gaps don't last very long at all, so you have to calculate fast. You've got these supercomputers scanning stocks all the time, and you've got to jump around them and dance. But this is one of the ways we do it, is we use these simple formulas, and there are much more complicated formulas that really don't do a whole hell of a lot more than this does. And that's why I show these. That's why we still show them in 240 classes, because as far as we go, some of this old school stuff is still very much in use out there, and it's still very much useful to you in the work that you will do, whatever it is, and in your personal lives as well. 1751 looks like, these numbers can be all over the board. One thing again, though, is that you got to make sure that you got a company that's stable. Its dividend is going to stay the same, or it's going to grow at a relatively constant rate for the foreseeable future. If those conditions are met, this formula here at the top actually is going to give you a pretty darn good shot at the price of it. And if it's a preferred stock, that's about, I mean, there's not much you can do with preferred stock. Interestingly enough, and just as a side comment on this, on preferred stock, there are these designers of what are called securities engineers, these designers of securities that have way too much spare time, and they've been doing all kinds of weird things with traditional securities. Watch what you're buying. I was always a proponent for fixed income investments of preferred stock. And then I got a little bit of a surprise. I was doing a little research on this one that looked kind of attractive, a preferred stock. And suddenly I noticed that the actual certificate itself had all this fine print, and preferred stock has some fine print, but this looked a little deeper. So I read into it. Oh, wait a minute. If this preferred stock doesn't pay its dividend, I thought, okay, yeah, then it has to pay it the next year. Yeah, it cumulative. No. This preferred stock, if it doesn't pay the cumulative dividend for like 5 years, the company can turn it into common stock. Do you understand what that means? It means that if the company is having financial difficulties and it can't meet the commitment to pay the preferred stock for 5 years, well, if the company's in that bad of shape, the company's common stock is worth crap. And what they can do is turn this higher quality preferred stock into the crap common stock that everyone else who is going to lose their shirts has. That's essentially the same thing that's what we call a convertible bond. Bonds that are issued, companies can borrow money, and under certain conditions, if the bond has a convertibility covenant, if the company gets in so much trouble it can't pay the interest, it can turn the debt into equity, into common stock, which basically means that the company is about to go bankrupt, so they'll turn the debt holders, who should be paid first, into the common stockholders who aren't going to get anything. Nasty stuff. So watch out with preferred stock these days, that it has its high quality. It doesn't have one of these trick covenants in it that it can be turned into to common stock. I thought, how common is this? How normal is this? Talked to a friend of mine who's a broker. He said, oh, that's the way we all do it. They all do it now. What? Pretty much all preferred stock. I don't buy that. I'm seeing some that doesn't have these covenants in it. But he was convinced that this is very much normal. Preferred stock just ain't what it used to be. But then again, what is? Yes?
How guaranteed is that? Is it anywhere said that they have to pay that?
Yeah, with normal preferred stock? Are you talking about with normal preferred stock?
I'm talking about with that trigger. Can they fake that they're doing bad and just dump everybody off?
Here's the deal. Here's the deal. When a company borrows money, issues bonds, notes, literally, the company becomes the bitch of the bondholders. There's a trustee that the bondholders appoint who oversees the operations of the company from then on. You can't invest in this. That's too risky. That might hurt us debt holders. Oh, you can't issue a dividend this year because we're afraid that would... Oh, they watch them like a hawk. But with preferred stock, because already you're technically an owner, it's an equity position, there's no one to watch your hen house. So the point that you're making, could they actually make it the conditions right so the preferred stock got screwed? There's no receiver. There's no trustee because they're just owners. So that would be one of my first questions is, how legitimate is it that they can't pay that preferred dividend? I would walk away from that kind of thing because I can't prove that they're not phonying up just to force all the preferred into common shareholder status. Exactly. I would not like that at all. But, then again, I'm just not a risk taker anymore. That's all I have for you today. Thank you.